Rub-a-dub-dub! Welcome to Crit Club, a podcast where four friends spin the wheel of hosting round and round and select a film from the Criterion channel that none of them have seen. And then we talk about it. I'm joined, as always, by these most distinguished masters, these elder dragons of the art of kung fu, my incredible co-hosts, Angela.
Howdy.
Peter Allen Clark.
Rub-a-dub-dub to you as well, sir.
And a rub-a-dub-dub to all of you. And Corey.
Hello.
Thanks to these fine people. This week's Crit Club is settling in for an absolutely, I'm going to say, zany selection. Yuen Woping's 1981 martial arts comedy slasher Dreadnought, starring Yuen Biao as our cringing cowardly hero, Mousy. Brian Leung as his shitty big brother figure, and Yuan Shun Yi chewing up the scenery as the White Tiger. The film follows Tiger, a deranged, ultra-violent criminal who is grieving, by the way, who hides from the police in a traditional Chinese theater company embroiled in a conflict with the famous Wong Fei Hung. Murder, dragon fights, acrobatics, slapstick, maybe too much slapstick, and one juicy stabbing follow as White Tiger closes in on Mousy, who always seems to know just enough kung fu to avoid a grisly death. I chose this film purely as an opportunity to have some fun with you guys. I love kung fu comedies. I love Jackie Chan, Sammo Hung, Stephen Chow. I love a good high-concept martial arts movie, which I think we can all agree this definitely is. Obviously, I have a lot of thoughts and questions and feelings about Dreadnought, but first I gotta kick it to my co-hosts. Did Dreadnought unleash your eagle claw technique? Did it hi-ya its way to your heart? Or did it not? Angela, let's start with you.
Oh, wow.
Or did you give your own two-finger goodbye to it?
The old two-thumbs-down technique.
Oh, there it is. Sorry, there Angela.
Oh, you're totally fine. It was a fun little romp, a little bit of simple good times, a welcome change from Hearts and Minds. So it was kind of fun just to sit around and not really have to care too much about what I'm watching, but still being, thoroughly entertained with the lion dances and dragon dances and balancing. I am very much impressed with the way in which you relayed what was apparently the plot, because I could not really follow what the
sure,
heck was going
we
on.
Can
it.
Talk and yet, about that.
But I just didn't care because, you know, pretty colors, people dancing, amazing kung fu, weird horror elements that were not that scary, but could be spooky enough. I really liked this, your kung fu, Mr. Kung Fu people. It was good times.
That's wonderful. Peter, what did you think of Dreadnought?
Well, you said you had a lot of thoughts about this movie, and I'm not sure I do. except, like, maybe that's not completely fair. It barely, like, you know what this movie was? I think I even wrote it down. I was like, oh, this is just like a circus with the barest sketch of a story sort of like propping it all up. And that's not me complaining at all. I had an incredible time watching it. I think it was actually really fascinating to think about it in terms of another Crit Club classic pick we watched, Police Story, which was really close to this, maybe a year or two after this, Jackie Chan's Police Story. And like thinking about it in terms of like Dreadnought's zaniness versus, well, Police Story definitely had its own zaniness, but it also felt like a little more full. Like it felt like there was more tangible, more to grab on to Police Story than this. This all felt very ephemeral, both in good and maybe like, you know, fluffy ways. I actually tried to look up to see like what they were even sort of called. Are these dragons or lions or when they were having the acrobatic fights, I assume they were dragons.
Dragon fight.
Well, that's what I thought too. They're called like lions in one scene. That was some of the coolest shit I've seen in a very long time. Like that was some of the most acrobatically interesting and like arresting a bit of like performance that I thought was fucking incredible. And also like this is the most I'll give this movie, but like there is like a real poetic touch to the fight between the two dragons slash lions, whereas the four men controlling them are also acting as the two individual creatures themselves while inhabiting them. And like the, like there's like a real poeticism within that performance, which I was like, man, this is marvelous. And then the rest of the movie happened. but you know, there are like other touches like that. Like I loved like the yin and yang fight of like the backward sort of facing. There's some like real amazingly beautiful stuff in here. And I missed somehow, I think you probably even said it last week, that it was a Wu Ping choreographed and directed Matrix, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, all of these incredible movies that had an impact on me younger. But yeah, I had a great time. Don't know if I have a lot of thoughts about it. Yeah. Thank you.
Corey, what'd you think?
Yeah, I mean, I also had a really good time with it too. I think that I have a really soft spot in my heart for movies that look good played like behind a bar. Like on a screen behind a bar, and then this one slit right into that, or slot right into that classification. It made me think of the movie that I was talking about last week, Forbidden Zone, which is that's how I saw Forbidden Zone. I was playing behind a bar at a show I was attending, and I think that this would very much do that too. I mean, I think that kung fu movies like this are a lot like, you know, porn movies of the 70s and 80s and 90s, I guess. It's like the plot's kind of there to give the sort of ridiculous, you know, setup for it, but you're really just moving scene to scene to get along to the hot kung fu action. You know, whether that be, you know, doing the laundry or getting a suit tailored or whatever. Like, these are just excuses to sort of show off a lot of these like crazy acrobatics and stuff.
Ordering a pizza.
Yeah, ordering a pizza. Yeah. It's I mean, so like, I mean, I definitely like laughed at this movie a lot more, like out loud, like a lot more than at least any Crit Club movie that I can think of for a while, if not any other sort of movie for a while, because of just how consistently ridiculous it is and how consistently over the top it is, and how it just really, really finds any excuse to use kung fu for any reason. Like that is the, you know, sort of Swiss Army knife one use tool for like the entire existence of this world and stuff. I don't have a lot of experience with kung fu movies, just some, you know, limited like Bruce Lee exposure, and obviously, you know, Police Story, which we watched together and stuff. So I don't know how common the tropes are in this, you know, for other things in the genre, but you know, I enjoyed watching this, and I would even say I would watch more of these. I don't know what a dreadnought is. Dreadnought's like a battleship,
yeah, I don't,
right? Like, I don't know where
that's
the,
what I thought.
What's
I
was so I confused guess, by this
white,
name.
Is White Tiger
the lost in translation thing, or
is that it?
I mean, there, it could have been this, like, yeah, the White Tiger, the Curse of the White Tiger, or the White Tiger Stalks. Or
White Tiger Stalks,
like,
is pretty,
I don't know,
cool.
There is neither dread nor not.
There's a little bit
movie.
Of dread. I felt, I mean, anyway. Some characters experienced quite a bit of dread before they were stabbed or beaten or otherwise dispensed with.
You know, Mousy does sort of tie the laundry in a knot to make it a dried knot.
A dried knot, that's what it was.
This is good.
This is a typo, a total typo.
It's lost in translation.
I just put it into Google Translate, and it says, in English, it's, "The brave have no fear."
That's Ooh. Cool.
Is the literal translation of the like Chinese for this.
I mean, like, yeah, dread not.
Dread not. Yes, sure.
Yeah. Interesting.
The brave have no fear. Dread
wow, we figured
did.
It out, guys.
Great. All right.
Thank you, everybody.
That's this week's Home Crit Club. Night. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, we're done here, everybody.
Wizard,
oh,
what do you think?
Oh, I had a fun
yeah,
time.
Wizard,
wasn't this a fun movie? Not? Like, all of my notes end in exclamation marks, which is fun. I think that, you know, I think that part of, you know, I said earlier, I have a lot of thoughts about this movie, and mostly I think I was just kind of overwhelmed by it because it is like a pretty much like nonstop, like Warner Brothers esque, like slapstick from start to finish.
It's
really
an assault on
is.
The senses.
I had to take a break in the middle because I was like, okay, it's like the ending of Akira. Like, it's just like yelling and like people running around. And so I guess, like, yeah, when I say I have too many, when I have thoughts about it, my first and foremost thought is but there's so much, like, there's so much fun. There's so many fun moments in this movie that I really enjoy. The dragon fight we talk about, where these four guys, yeah, embody their dragons in such a way that, like, when they're, like, fighting with each other, they kick parts of the dragon costume where there are no people, but, like, they react as if they're injured. It's this, like, beautiful, like, poetic, like, dance. What is his name? The Devil Taylor was maybe one of my favorite characters. I think that's a future cosplay or something. We had a hard time with the plot, I hear. I certainly had a hard time with the plot and had to do some digging.
I mean, but that's also like giving it credit for having a plot.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things.
At one point, I went to the Wikipedia article to I paused the movie and went to the Wikipedia article just to see what was going on. And the Wikipedia article was describing nothing that was going on in the screen. So I was just like, okay, I'm just...
Yeah, the Wikipedia article is a bit challenging. It explains the basic situation and then mostly describes the Eagle Claw technique and how that's pivotal to the film, which is really excellent writing, Wikipedia. Yeah, and given that this is a comedy, so I've seen a lot of martial arts movies, and Wong Fei-hung is a big character in martial arts films. The actor in this film who plays Wong Fei-hung has played him 78 times in other movies. Which I believe holds some kind of record for most this kicks the shit out of fucking Kelsey Grammer's Frasier run, I guess is what I'm saying. So Wong Fei-hung is a character that he's a doctor, but also a martial arts master, kung fu master. But he's in this movie and White Tiger's friend that hides him he also controls a theater company that is also a kung fu school, and Wong Fei-hung runs a doctor's office that is also a kung fu school. Is that what's happening here? I mean, it's one of the tropes of
you gotta cover your bases, you know, like when the theater isn't doing well, you can fall back on the doctoring or the laundry or whatever.
Criminal kung fu
is.
Empire.
It's kung fu all the way down.
Well, and again, you know, I think that is certainly a trope of these films, is everyone has got a little kung fu in them. Everybody, even Mousy, he's got kung fu he doesn't even know about. He uses it for laundry. He's that good. Having some of the things in this film, like Wong Fei-hung's rivalry with a theater school, is this parody? Am I watching a Naked Gun-esque parade of goofs that aren't translating? This is a question I had during the movie. And it doesn't seem to matter all that much, because this is a movie that is really super broad and relies on a lot of physical comedy and sight gags. How about the dick joke at the murder scene? That was very funny.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Oh, yeah.
That was great. Nope. That's the knife sticking out of him. Very funny. It's just so good.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it gave me Clerks vibes.
I thought they were really going to run with it too. I was like, all right, maybe he died with him.
Well, I was like, oh, this movie's kind of taking a turn. We haven't had this kind of humor in it so far, but.
And then that one dude's like, I gotta see it.
Dead guy's dick. Yeah, and you know, other questions, where is this coming from in terms of, it goes full slasher movie at one point, which I really enjoyed. I wrote it down, the death of Fatty Kwan signifies the movie's turn into slasher film territory. It's an assault on the senses. It is a zany adventure, and it's blending all of these different... all of these different genres together in a way that is just super, super fun. Before we started recording, I mentioned that it reminded me of a Crit Club pick that was not a Police Story. During the initial introduction of the theater company, there's people moving around everywhere. There's random kung fu. It reminded me of Tati.
Multiple Maniacs?
It reminded me... Yes, it reminded me. It reminded me of the restaurant scene in the Tati film that we watched, where everywhere is a little physical feat, a little sight gag, a little something is happening everywhere.
I had the same thought. I actually thought the same thing. I was this and Daisies. So, you know, because it's just
to,
all goofy. Mm-hmm.
Shout out to Daisies
goofy
fans.
And weird and playful.
Yeah. Wow.
So how many, what is your experience with Kung Fu? It sounds like you might have seen the most of us in the group. And like how many other like Kung Fu comedies have you seen? How does it stack up?
I mean,
up?
They're all kind of like this, as far as I can say. Like, a film I want to recommend to everybody, if we haven't seen it, is The Magnificent Butcher, starring Sammo Hung, which I think is also either directed or choreographed by Yuen Woo-ping, and came out on either side of 2 years of this film, I think. Again, like, your protagonist is always like an aspiring like kung fu guy who is secretly really good at kung fu, but everyone thinks he's a dope. Mousy is like pure like this trope or archetype. I thought he was portrayed super well. I thought some of his like physical comedy was super fun.
That guy's face. Yeah, his face, like rubber face that he made use of, was incredible.
And then obviously Jackie Chan, and then the work of Stephen Chow, like Kung Fu Hustle, Shaolin Soccer. One thing that I caught that was super fun is White Tiger's wife is portrayed by an actress named Yuan Cho, who appears in Kung Fu Hustle like 30 years later as the landlady character, if anybody's seen Kung Fu Hustle. She appears as the landlady character. She like this is an actress that's been in kung fu films for like, you know, like 30 or 40 years. It's cool to see these faces pop up and this like long like stable of actors like appear and disappear and that kind of thing. I don't know. Did we have favorite?
I might have to dive into this. Were there more things like this
on
the
So I have no idea why this is
right
on
now?
The Criterion Channel. And if anyone listening knows, write in and let us know.
Well, yeah, I mean, like Police Story was too. I mean, like this is like foundational. I mean, this arc of like, you know, mid-70s through mid-80s in terms of, you know, especially Hong Kong and the kung fu sort of movies. This is very much what was happening. You look at like Woo-ping's filmography through this time, and he's just directing a movie a year or something around now. Mm-hmm. About Dreadnought specifically, what was going on? Like, who was the is that something I missed about who the White Tiger was? Why people were chasing after him to begin with? Why he became evil?
I don't think we know why he was being chased, but like his partner dies, and I figured that was
and so he
why
just went
he
crazy,
just
goes berserk, and
like the bells, like somebody wearing like jingling bells,
because of the bells around her ankle. You know, it's his berserker rage trigger.
I got that.
But
there's like so much happens in this movie. Like again, this isn't me criticizing it exactly, but so much happens before I know even who the good guy, who I should like care about or not. You know what I'm saying? Of like, we are introduced to that character, and I assume that's the protagonist. So next we like, I don't even know sort of what happens. It takes like really 20 to 25 minutes from like, okay, I guess Mousy is the protagonist.
Yeah.
Ish in this movie. Like it takes a very long time. I think it, but I also don't care because who cares?
It's true.
But,
and the love interest. It's like a fun movie. Yeah. I feel like the love interest thing comes in kind of like pretty late. Like it was like at least halfway through the movie that we're starting to get like that whole subplot and stuff. So
the dragon fight takes up like a good like,
oh man,
that dragon fight goes on and on.
Well, I mean like, but even before that, you have like him doing his own sort of dragon performance, lion thing of like drinking the water and getting sleepy around it, which is incredible. Absolutely incredible. But also didn't really further the plot along.
It's funny, like, because I was watching this, I was like, how long is this thing? I was like, oh, this is a tight 90 minutes. This could be like 10 minutes shorter and probably be fine.
But that would be my favorite stuff, though. I mean, like that, those
dragon fight was very good.
Really, for me, breathtaking.
The fight with the Devil Tailor was truly, truly something. And of course,
I like the flying guillotine.
The
right? There's apparently whole movies about the flying guillotine. And I just found out that Kung Fu Theater in Portland has been showing them. And so I'm hoping to get to see like a few of those.
Yeah, and I guess I'm left wondering, like, how many of the things that I liked in this movie are, like, tropes or things that are just sort of in other movies and stuff. Like, I really liked the sleeves thing, like the sleeves flying out.
Is that,
all that
Shen Yun? Is that what that...
the touring theater company.
The right-wing Trump-loving cult.
Connected to...
Yes.
Don't go to Shen Yun, people.
National
don't support that.
In China.
But I thought you loved cults, Corey.
I love watching and gawking at cults. I don't like giving them money and giving them power.
Also, Shen Yun, don't at us. We're not experts on anything. So, just a heads up.
What else did you like, Corey? Like, so the sleeves?
The sleeves. I don't know. There were so many things of just like, especially like early on, because this is all like new to me, and so the guy goes to the doctor and he just basically like beats the shit out of him until he's healthy. It's
traditional Chinese medicine.
Yeah, exactly.
You hurt here because you hurt here, which means I have to punch you here.
Mm-hmm.
Fast.
Well, and it sort of was all the use of fire in that was a counterpoint to that whole scene with Mousy hiding in the water.
Mm-hmm.
In those barrels from the tiger guy.
Was water a symbol throughout Dreadnought, y'all?
I don't know, man.
Or is that me looking
some of those instances of water turned out to be alcohol. There's just like clay jugs of alcohol like all over the place, like Legend of Zelda. Like at the beginning he like grabs one and dumps it like all over. He gets drunk and then berserks out.
Because I'm thinking about how water came to play within the different dragon fights. I'm thinking about whenever Mousy dunked the white tiger and like fell in like half of his mask, washed off. I don't know.
Water there's like a water philosophy behind Kung Fu. Like Bruce Lee was obsessed with water, and his sister actually wrote a memoir of her brother / like self-help book about like called the Water Way or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I do think it's relevant because you also had this counterpoint of a lot of sort of like fiery things but I don't know.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like Corey, I have the same question as you because I don't think I've seen as many of these as I want to. And while I've watched some of the older Bruce Lee ones, I think those are of a different type than this, right? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like Bruce Lee was
serious.
Absolutely... very serious, very technically proficient. Like it's you know, it's not so much of a performance as it is a demonstration almost. And I think I'm also more familiar with like the late 90s through where we are now, and I've seen a lot of the sort of martial arts kung fu movies that have come out in this time that all are very obviously sort of built on the top of movies like this, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, not only Crouching Tiger, but also, you know, Kung Fu Hustle, Shaolin Soccer, like all these things that are definitely like learned from all of this and in a lot of ways, I'm sure, referencing this era of these movies. So I have the same question as you, Corey. I would love to know how much of different styles are tropes or references, and maybe if I knew or had a firmer grounding in this era, maybe I wouldn't have enjoyed this movie as much as I did. But I also just enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, if you know, this guy's playing the same character and 80 films, like how much repeat stuff is there in that? Like, I mean, it's, I don't know, it's interesting.
I mean, you gotta figure, yeah, like there's a lot, like these are stables of actors, right? Mm-hmm. Like the lead in this film went to the same Peking opera school as Jackie Chan and Sammo Hung and learned like this like acrobatic like martial arts, like this very like showy physical like theater technique, right? So I'm sure all of these actors are recognizable faces, and I'm sure they all have like many, many screen credits. I mean, listeners, there's a kung fu expert out there who wants to let us know. I would love to know more about this. Because there's a whole other like studio system, like a whole other like history of film, like baked into these kinds of movies that I think would just be so interesting to dig into.
And like the history of this, of that studio system within Hong Kong at this time is also something I would love to know about, because I think whenever we talked about Police Story, there was something about that movie because of it being like a troupe, like almost of like, you know, Jackie Chan and his band of merry performers sort of thing, like, but all sort of that sort of a piece. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, Dreadnought, if a lot of these, you know, if this were the same sort of troupe like system or you know, like company, I guess is what you think of, like, yeah. And again, I come back to the thing of this being a circus, which again is not a slight at all. I had a great time watching it, but also kind of makes me think of this movie more in terms of maybe something like Multiple Maniacs, right? Of maybe of just like a bunch of like talented weirdos or you know, who just want to get together and do weird things.
This would almost be like a normal quote unquote movie if it weren't for the presence of White Tiger, who is doing a completely different kind of movie. Like
one
like
face,
one glowering face. Every time you see him, he's just like growling to himself and his face is screwed up and he's just staring into space. And then everybody's like, oh, there's White Tiger. And when he finally snaps and paints his face and goes full slasher mode, the movie, I think, really, like, that's where it really, like, comes into its own. But there's a funny but relatively subdued kung fu film about two, like, competing circus companies or whatever. Then there's White Tiger doing his thing, which...
I would say that the White Tiger guy is in the same world though as the guy who keeps saying superintendent.
Oh, like, my God, with his, like, that was too much. That around
ridiculous
there was
cartoon character, like
the whole thing is such a cartoon.
I was like, yeah. Say superintendent one more time, I'll throw my laptop out the goddamn window. I swear to God. But it is that very like broad, like Three Stooges, like loud physical comedy. It's good to know that we all love that, or at least.
And like a lot of I think most of the time it works for me. Like, I don't know. I have the image of them having the fight in the alley of White Tiger and Mousy having the fight in the alley. And then like Mousy standing up and then like having like White Tiger like on his head as he's like above him and stuff. Like, I don't know. I laughed at that. I thought it was there was a number of things in here that I think were really like clever and funny.
Yeah, like fun setups, like what's the word? Like sort of like original or like hopefully like innovative like executions of these comedy situations.
Mm-hmm. I mean, rest in peace to like all the tables and chairs that met their untimely fate in this movie.
So much breakaway wood. Just crash, crash, crash.
No, it was all real hardwood.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, they're just that strong.
I think about like...
Well, I guess I'm curious to, because I have seen some Bruce Lee movies, so I'm curious to like go and like maybe watch some more of those and see like how many cuts there are and how much like what the editing is like. Because in this, there's just, it's constant cuts. It's every 2 seconds we're switching, you know, cutting. And I'm sure, I mean, these are all extremely talented performers and all that stuff. But I'm sure a lot of it is, you know, cut to change the camera angle, to like get something safer, to get the right movement, to, you know, get someone, whatever. Like, so I'm just interested in seeing like, I don't know, the style of editing and how that would be different across different styles of kung fu movies
for now. Sure, like how much effort went into shooting the dragon fight, because you know, it's a pretty complex like circus trick that they're performing. And yeah, there's so many cuts, there's so many cuts and so many changes in perspective that you're like, what did they actually do while they were filming this?
And because in that, which was interesting, because there were a couple things that happened in the dragon lion fight where definitely it's Hollywood magic. Like, they didn't actually do a thing, right? And it's shot in such a way to sort of hide, you know, that the people are being held aloft by whatever, and it's, you know, I don't know why I'm bringing that up, but yeah.
There's like,
how did you all watch it? Is it sub or dub?
Did we sub or dub Crit Club?
Sub.
Well, I asked first. Urgent question. Mm-hmm. Sub or dub?
You, always sub.
I dub.
I always do sub, but then it sounded like it was recommended that I do dub for this. And
I wanted to know what Wizard intended.
Oh,
I'm because
it would
that.
Change. It was in the text. I texted the group chat, and I figured it would be a different movie, right? If we're watching with subtitles, totally different movie than watching as if it was dubbed.
Really, a slightly and different Wizard... movie. They're like cousin. They'd be like cousin movies, you know?
Well, yeah, I would just be doing two different things. One is the reading of the thing, and the other is not doing any reading, and so it just automatically sets my brain on a different perspective. I would say the dubbing got me to enjoy banter from my partner who was watching it with me, which made the movie much funnier. And actually, I got a little, like, I didn't know about the flying guillotine thing, that it was a thing. And now I want to see more movies with that.
I definitely liked that I was able to, I guess, just pay more attention to the kung fu with the dub, you know, so I'm not reading and I'm able to, like, you know, watch a lot more of it. I think that a lot of the accents were especially, I don't know, really funny at first. Like, I don't know, like Mousy had this like Liverpudlian, like accent.
I thought it was
like he sounded like a beetle or something.
Australian accent.
Oh,
I was
yeah, there's some Australian.
I kept being like, why are the Beatles in this movie? Yeah.
Help us.
It was like,
I feel bad. I'm sorry, guys. I missed that.
No, I'm glad someone watched it.
Yeah.
No, because I think
I'm imagining, like, I'm too afraid to go get
that's
somebody.
Kind of what
it is kind of like that. It is kind of like that. And, you know, the thing is, I think subtitling, I think watching it with subtitles gives you a better appreciation for the quote unquote nuance of performance. in its native language, like to like hear like what like comedic intonation is in a film of this, like to get like a full richer experience, I think subtitles is the way to go. But out of respect for bad dubbing in kung fu, I recommended the dub for people, which I actually, in hindsight, I think if I was going to watch this movie again, and I think I would watch it with subtitles, because I found parts of it bewildering just because of the audio quality of the dub. And like, again, the voice actors that they used to dub the film, there were times where I was like, I have no idea what was said. I can't get any subtitles for the dub, so I'm just going to roll with it, which made the movie this kind of fever dream that I really enjoyed.
Well, I mean, I think with a lot of things like this, even watching in subtitles, those are still dubbed. Like, every line of dialogue is still dubbed, and probably not by, you know, the actual actor
writing
the lines. And so, rest assured, my three friends, that I was still very lost reading what was going on, because many times it didn't make sense. But then that led me wondering if, like, how much of this is like lost in translation of me just not what parts of this are, you know, the Hong Kong culture that I'm just not going to know about. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's cool as hell.
Yeah,
it was cool as hell. What a silly time.
Do we think animals were harmed in the making of this movie?
Oh,
absolutely.
That fucking chicken.
Yeah,
was
that chicken
beheaded.
Bit it.
They killed that chicken. I was very surprised. I was like, I spent a minute wondering. I was like, how would you do that? No. They killed that chicken, and they killed that
cockroach. Well, there
were two
shots. It was like right after the other, which was a great journey for me. Because the first shot you see is White Tiger holding a beheaded chicken and chicken head, and that was probably, you know, like whatever. But it was just so jarring. I like exclaimed like, "Oh my god!" And then they cut to the actual ground shot of it, where there literally was a beheaded chicken, running
chicken
around.
Flapping
around. I was like,
"Oh,
they
man,
just went
I
ahead and did
that
it."
Part. Damn.
That's for the best. I'm sure the crew got that chicken. So you know what? It's no big deal. Fine.
And then shortly after, he kind of like picks up like a frog or a lizard or something, and just like throws it against the wall, and just like
he does pick a frog up out of the barrel that Mousy is hiding in, and he kind of then throws it. Hopefully, it was a rubber frog. He definitely pulls the head off of a live cockroach.
The cockroach too. Yeah,
yeah,
and also when the lions or dragons are fighting over the fish prize, or the ones trying to that fish was alive.
That was a living fish. Yeah. So. I don't know. There's somebody. If there's anybody we can contact, let us know. Let us know.
Yeah. But that chicken was a bit. That was surprising. I was like,
was
oh,
very
that's real.
Jarring.
That is real. It's like, they don't have the special effects budget for that.
This is a very different movie. Chicken.
What else? I don't know if I've got much else to say.
I really don't know. I love.
I'm like.
The movie got better towards the end, like the last 15 minutes. That fight scene mm-hmm. with that dual and
so
double
cool.
character was the best fight scene of the whole movie. I'm like, oh, this is why I'm watching
character.
This movie. Amazing.
Yeah, that was really incredible.
Was cool.
And to steal from Andy, he's like, this is the, what is that horrible video game that takes forever? And it's crushed, like, it was last year's big thing from From Studios.
Elden Ring?
That's the one. He's like, oh, this is the backstory for Elden Ring. Okay, we got this.
Yeah, Frida watched the whole movie. She did not enjoy this. She doesn't really like, I guess, like kung fu movies or whatever. But there were certain points in the movie where she was like, I like this. And she liked the dual monster thing. And
the sleeve duel?
Yeah.
But that is something that happens because this movie does get weirdly supernatural, know? And I would love to, like, that's something I'm curious of what you all thought about, because it gets more supernatural over time, or does it? Is that, were there elements of this that kind of were in the beginning or early parts of this that kind of just didn't show themselves? Because not only this, you know, this person or this dual fight becoming two people from, you know, from a front and back,
right?
But also the sort of very final fight of like White Tiger's sleeves, you know, actually becoming extensions.
That's just good kung fu, you know.
Oh hell yeah!
You know, your sleeves, just when you're really good at kung fu, your sleeves just are an extension of your body, literally extend from your body. Good kung fu. But yeah, thoughts about the supernatural aspects of it? I don't know, not really. I just rode with it.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I don't have to find meaning in it. I'm just asking the questions here.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, what do we feel? Did we hit the end of the road with Dreadnought? I mean, what more can be said about a movie with all the high kicks you can high kick at?
I mean, just the puppeteering of those. I'm looking at my notes. Just the puppeteering, because it's not only the physical action of putting in like the leg strength and balance and coordination with a teammate of like, but also another team working, but like the animation of the head mm-hmm. and face mm-hmm. while doing all these stunts. I mean, I just truly one of the coolest things I've seen.
You really feel like they genuinely wanted that fish.
It was so cool. God, I've never seen. I've just incredibly amazing.
I guess the only other thing that I really want to touch on very briefly is rub-a-dub-dub. Laundry technique saves the day in the end. Our hero combats flying sleeves with a two-finger laundry technique. Mm-hmm. He knew kung fu all
along. It kind of reminded me of like Karate Kid, like sort of learning the wax on, wax off, and then it comes into play later. Yep. You know?
That's smart. That's very smart. Yeah. Chekhov's laundry.
Yeah, Chekhov's two-fingered eagle claw technique. You know it's going to come up. Honestly, guys, this was a great time. It was a great fun. It was great fun mm-hmm. to watch this movie. It was great fun to discuss it with you. It is okay that we find ourselves thinking, man, what a silly movie. And I think it's time we roll on this silly movie. Listeners, if you're joining us for the first time, welcome. And also here at Crit Club, we do things a little bit differently. We rate our films on a 1 to 20 scale in honor of the polyhedral die, the D20, from which all adventure springs. I'm going to go in reverse order just to shake it up, because reverse order is fun. But then I kind of forgot what order I initially went in. I think it was Corey who's up first.
Was I last?
Yeah.
Was I last? Was I first?
You're first now.
Do you want me to go?
No, we got to. Stick to the plan, everyone.
I think this ekes into the upper quartile for me. So I'm gonna give it a 15. I mean, I definitely like it's not like a great movie, but like it also kind of is. Like, it's not like I'm not here for the plot, I'm not here for the characters, but as far as like a spectacle and something that I genuinely enjoyed watching, I'm feeling 15 on it. So.
Right on. Mm. Angela, what are you thinking about Dreadnought?
Ooh, I'm going to give it a 14. I thought about 16, but I think that that's a little too high. I had a good time. It was super fun. And the dancing stuff was amazing. Kung Fu on point. I want to see more movies like this. And I feel lucky that I can go and see some in person. So, you know, keep picking them, Wizard. Hey.
I'll keep picking them if Criterion keeps throwing them out there. Peter, what did you think of Dreadnought?
Yeah, I'm riding with Angela on this one. I'm thinking of 14 as well. Like it was a great time, but what have I said? The highs weren't as high as other movies. And I think I'm thinking a lot about they're very different movies and different types of movies from Police Story, and so I shouldn't compare it to that as much as possible. But just thinking about not even things to chew on, but more like substance. Like you know, it did feel like from one. You know, showcase to another showcase, which is fine and great. And this was exceedingly entertaining. But, you know, on a scale of movies from, you know, good to bad or quality to quality, connect to disconnect, I think 14 is very wonderful. And I had a fucking awesome time.
Right on.
What about you, Wizard?
You know, I think we got a pretty tight pack here. This happens with movies that we're all like, yeah, this was okay. I'm going to give it a 15. I had a great time watching it. It gave me a new way to do my laundry. It's like just a funny ride. You know, I think, yeah, it is a thing that kind of like drags you from like scene to scene. And I guess that's the comedy aspect of it, right? It's like, these are like sketches or like bits, you know, in a that would be in a comedy film. These would be like the comedic scenes that make up a comedy film that are like slightly disconnected. There's like a plot running through here, but yeah, it's weird to say, but Police Story is the more grounded film.
Yeah, right.
But I'm going to give it a 15. This was super fun, and I had a great time watching it. There is a small collection of Crit Club films that we have all seen. This belongs to that group of films that I really wish we could all watch in the same room together, because this is one of those movies that would be super fun to watch together.
That's something to think about, of like all of us having a little like trip or something, meeting up and having like a nice little movie marathon live episode of just the four of us.
Oh my God.
I would love to watch this. I would like watching some of these old ones. Yeah. Just again, I would fucking love to watch Dreadnought with you all.
Yeah. Well, that'd be fun.
Yeah. There we have it. So we've all rolled, and here we are at the end of our discussion of Dreadnought. If you had thoughts on Dreadnought, if you want to tell us about your kung fu and how it helps improve your life, reach out to us. We're on the interwebs at Crit Club Podcast. I never remember.
At gmail.com.
We've done this before. At gmail.com. We are on Threads. We are on Instagram. We are on many of the socials. One day we'll open up a Blue Sky account and then we'll really have arrived. But that is it for our discussion of Dreadnought. And I'm really interested to see what folks have cooked up for next week. I believe it's an Angela pick.
Oh, yeah, people. We're getting ready. We're getting ready to travel to Yuma on the 310 to Yuma, the 1957 original All aboard. It's based on a short story by Elmore Leonard, directed by Delmar Dave, starring Glenn Ford and Van Helfen or Heflin. And it's about a drought-impoverished rancher who takes on the risky job of escorting a notorious outlaw to justice.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm excited to go back to the wild American West. We did recently see Johnny Guitar. So, you know, it's going to be great to see this, and we can talk about the more recent version that some of us have already seen.
Who's seen the original one? Or the most recent one, sorry.
Mm-mm. That's Russell Crowe and Christian Bale, maybe? Mm-hmm. I have not seen it, but...
I have not either. No one?
Is anyone? Nothing. Nobody.
Oh, great. Cool. I don't know what this movie's about.
Me neither.
Except...
Go in blind. Let's see if we like
great.
It. I mean, my all-time favorite Western is Dead Man by, I believe, Jim Jarmusch. So I also like The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance and The Searchers. So I'm really looking forward to seeing, you know, how does the 310 to Yuma, which in my estimation is supposed to be a highly regarded Western, how does this fit into the oeuvre of Western cinema?
I'm so excited. Yeah. I also didn't know this was an Elmore Leonard short story. I went on a kick of his last year, I guess, and read 3-4 books of his and plan to read more because that man can weave a tale.
Mm. Well, he will have woven our tale that we're watching next week. And I can't, you know, I'll be excited to hear how, you know, your experience reading his other works impacts the storytelling and your impression of it.
That's fun. Hell yeah. Very excited.
So cool. 310 to Yuma next week. That is super exciting. Well,
I'll only make that joke 3 more times in the next 2 weeks, listeners.
I think it'll be fine. I think we can enjoy each and every one.
You're very kind.
Well, so we have seen Dreadnought. We are going to see 310 to Yuma. But everybody, I know you're asking, what else are you watching? And so I'm going to ask my co-hosts, what else are you watching? Oh, let's roll them dice. Peter, what else are you watching?
Okay. Yeah. Last, I'm in marathon training mode and I'm also in like the tail end of it when you do like the crazy long runs. And so my Sundays are now, you run way too far and then I just do nothing except for watch movies. I watched Shiva Baby.
Oh yeah.
From a couple of years ago. Yeah. Did you like
that? Yeah, I really liked it.
It's fantastic. I forget the filmmaker's name here. Emma Seligman. Seligman. Sorry if I'm butchering that name.
Right, but yeah, it's the actor Rachel Sennett, in it, the star is
yeah,
like, she's like a person
incredible.
Now.
Oh yeah, she's incredible. Yeah, she's great in Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. She's great in Bottoms. Have you seen Bottoms?
No,
Corey?
I haven't seen Bottoms. I would like to.
Corey.
Yeah.
I would love to hear your thoughts on Bottoms. I was not prepared for the tone that Bottoms has. But Shiva Baby is great. Like I think, you know, I think I've maybe seen what, you know, it's just like a very small little sort of comedy drama about, you know, a young woman having to go to a Shiva where somebody brings a baby. And maybe I've seen other, like, this seems like in the thread of, like, Tiny Furniture or, like, maybe a couple, like, mumblecore movies. Mm-hmm. But this was fantastic. I don't know. Like, I hadn't seen this variation on it, and I thought this variation on it was fantastic.
Yeah, it almost feels like a stage play. It's just all kind of, like, within a house, within a room, almost. Like, yeah, it's very, yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
I really liked it.
Yeah, it was so cool. Yeah, I was glad I watched it. And then I've been going through, when I'm not running too far, I've been going through a really intense bout of work stuff. And so my evenings have been spent rewatching Cheers again.
Cheers? And so, really?
Yeah.
Sure. But it is like a TV writing goldmine. If you want to know how to write a good TV show, watch the first pilot episode of Cheers. Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
Fun times.
Well, I mean, Angela, this is my segment. You get your own segment.
Sorry.
Let me talk about Cheers. But while I say it is a writing goldmine, and if you want to learn how to write an episode of television, watch the pilot episode of Cheers. Literally, I will occasionally just watch the pilot episode of Cheers again because it is incredible. Absolutely incredible. And I'm here to tell you that I feel I don't know how much we should say about this, but well, whatever, I'll just say it. We're a friend project of having a zine, of a love and hate zine thing. I'm probably on record, probably on this podcast for saying this, of how deeply I absolutely love the first 5 seasons of Cheers and how deeply I hate the 6 through 9 seasons of Cheers.
It often happens.
Like, crazy bad. Crazy shift. In
That's something that happened to one of my What Else You Watchins.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, oh, yeah. It's like I'm on season 5 now of Cheers, and it's just been, it's awesome. Like, I have so much to say about it and so much to think about it, and it's just an incredibly interesting show. And I think, like, from a writing standpoint, fascinating to see the threads they pull and how they pull them. This nightly routine has also been coupled with me playing on my Steam Deck Balatro, the video game Balatro, which is run-based roguelike playing card, one of those that you can just get sucked into for hours and hours and hours. And, you know, it's one of those, and it's a damn good one of those. When you get bored of Slay the Spire, when you get bored of Binding of Isaac, Balatro will be there for you with its one of those nests. That's what I've been watching.
Right on, right on. It's good to hear. Edgel, what else have you been watching?
Well, after watching Dreadnought, I ended up watching Martin Scorsese's documentaries, Italian American and An American Boy. And you, all of you, need to watch these movies because I had no fucking clue how much these two very simple documentaries have informed American cinema for these last 40 years since they were these documentaries were made. They're both super short documentaries, like 40 minutes each. I dare you all to watch American Boy, like, and
you think
come
I'm
back
chicken?
To me.
You think I'm
I do. I do think you're chicken, or at least afraid of being possibly bored or something, because
I'll show you.
It contains inspiration for one of the 1990s best films, and I had no idea. This is where the information for An Infamous Scene from the 1990s came from, and I couldn't believe it as I was watching it, that I was getting the answers to some questions in that film that changed my life in the early 90s. That some of those questions were being answered, and it was fucking incredible. I don't want to say more because I don't want to ruin it for you. Like, Italian American wasn't nearly as exciting as American Boy, but it was weird for me just in terms of, you know, I was raised in an Italian American family, and I was expecting to see a lot more sentimental stuff that would make me cry. But instead, what I saw was the effect of how, like, the trauma of surviving and how, like, and not having any alternatives to how you cope with life and how it kind of informed how my parents behave in the world. That was kind of mind blowing for me. That, and it, very simple, easy, like, and Martin Scorsese as a young kid is in it, you know, which as an example of self-referential documentary filmmaking, which is kind of a counterpoint to what we saw in Hearts and Minds. So another reason why I think it's on the Criterion Channel. I have regrets that I didn't choose these two films for us to watch and talk about on the show. But if you guys all get a chance to watch them, you know, they're just short little things. I might be super sensitive and just have like this outsized reaction to them. But still, I think I'm a changed movie watcher from having watched them. It, especially also, I just want to talk about last week's movie, 400 Blows. That movie, in retrospect, has changed how I look at cinema, and has given me a greater appreciation for the new wave. And so those three movies altogether have
You can't change your score.
Oh, and I'm not going to.
Don't even think about it.
Oh, yeah, no shenanigans. But I feel like I am a stronger film watcher with more a stronger sense of nuance because of all those movies. But then I also, what else have I been watching on top of that? Problemista. I saw Problemista starring Tilda Swinton in the theater. And
what was that?
It was good. It was cute. It was sweet. I know that time is at a premium. And so sometimes you have to choose one movie over another. And I would say this one, you don't necessarily have to see in theaters. However, in terms of representation of immigrant culture, I think it deserves people to actually go to the theater and so that this film makes money because we need more stories like this. And it was a fun and interesting New York story, American story, you don't necessarily have to see in the theater, but I enjoyed it. It's not like if I was rating it on our 20 scale, I would give it a 16. And then that's everything. That's what I'm watching.
Right on. Corey, what you watching?
So Frida finished her Jodie Foster watchathon. She watched 49 of her 50 movies. We cannot find a copy of, was it Abby Singer anywhere? So I don't know if anyone knows how to find that. Please help. But the last one that we watched was O'Hara's Wife. And this one was also really hard to find. It took a friend out of town finding it at his local like library, finding a physical copy of it, and then like streaming it for us to watch. And it was fun to watch it with friends and like, you know, make fun of it the entire time because it's just terrible. It's absolutely terrible. Starring Ed Asner, doing a terrible job.
Hollywood heartthrob Ed Asner.
Yeah, Jody is like not in it that much. And it's just a really, really, it's about this guy who's like, wife dies and then he sees her ghost. So you'd think that'd be like a interesting setup, but they don't do anything with it. And it's like super boring. And it's just like, it's just a god awful, completely forgotten movie for good reason. But we finished that. And it was fun watching that terrible movie with friends. Mm. Noah and I have decided that we're going to watch Game of Thrones. I've seen a lot of Game of Thrones up until a point in like season 5 or 6, I guess, where I got so angry with the show that I stopped watching. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's before it actually like ended up with those, like, what was it, like the last 2 seasons of it that were like really, really bad that everyone like hated.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very, very bad.
So I didn't even see any of those.
Why are you doing this to yourself?
I know.
Yeah, maybe don't.
Well, because those first like 4 or 5 seasons are like some of the best television that's ever been made. Loved it.
Did you like the ending to Lost?
I never watched Lost because I waited till that was over.
I will defend that last season. It is not good, but I rewatched all of Lost last year and I was like, you know what? Not bad. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I didn't get into Lost, and then I was kind of waiting for it to end to see if it ended well, and then it didn't. I'm like, screw that. I'm not doing that. But like Game of Thrones, I was watching as it came out.
You should watch Lost instead. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really? Because
Lost is fucking great.
I'm loving I'm loving rewatching Game of Thrones. Like, it's okay. Really good, but I don't know. Maybe we'll see. Yeah, I do want to go get through it. I want to watch those last couple of seasons that I missed, even though they're terrible and everyone hates them. I'm just curious.
And I feel like my perspective on Game of Thrones is a bit skewed. Like at least through seasons 5 through the end of it, I was working in digital media, and a not insubstantial percentage of my time was spent either writing or editing stories about Game of Thrones. And so we all had to, like, it was a crazy traffic driver for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. And so we had to, like, everyone had to be as up on it as possible. And so I feel like an unfair part of my professional life has been spent around that fucking show that ended terribly.
Interesting. My other thing is that I am one challenge away from, Binding of Isaac, speaking of Binding of Isaac, has the base game and then 3 additional DLCs. I have 100% of the base game. I have 100% of one of the first DLC. I am one challenge away from 100%ing the next DLC. And it's literally called Ultra Hard. It's the Ultra Hard Challenge, and it is impossible, and it is stupidly boring, and I'm just banging my head trying to do it because this is something that I have to do. And then I've also like completed a lot of the stuff for the next batch of DLC. That's still going to take a while to complete, but I don't know. I've been playing this game since it came out, and I'm still just playing it. It's an addiction, but I don't know. I may never get this completion of that DLC, but I'm saying right here, I got damn close. So
I believe
we believe in you, buddy.
Wizard,
what else are you watching?
Oh, it's me, it's Wizard. Unfortunately, I'm not watching a ton. I am taking breaks from work periodically to enjoy a little show that pretty much never fell off in terms of writing quality. I am doing a rewatch of King of the Hill, and it is just King of the Hill is Wizard's like ultimate comfort food show. There's like what, like 8 seasons of just like unimpeachable like character comedy. It's one of my favorite shows. Love pretty much every episode. And for a while, you were not able to watch King of the Hill on any streaming service in Canada, and now I can. So thumbs up to that. I haven't been able to take in any movies or anything like that. Still watching Shogun, although I'm behind a few episodes, but that's fine. I'll get to it. It's great. I want to shout out, I'm going to do a book shout out. The book is Best Served Cold by author Joe Abercrombie. Trying to remember if I've mentioned Joe Abercrombie on the podcast or not, but he is a British fantasy author. He has a series of novels in a fantasy world of his invention. His books are super dark, are like darkly funny. very, very enjoyable, like a cynical take on fantasy and that kind of nonsense, but always funny and still like very moving and very human. Best Served Cold is a revenge story about a woman who is wronged by a gang of seven men and left for dead, and then she spends the rest of the book plotting and working to murder all of them. It's really, really great. It's a really, really excellent book. I just finished it and had a blast reading it. So if y'all need a little like grim, dark, goofy, funny fantasy in your life where everyone is a little bit of a bastard, strongly recommend Joe Abercrombie and Best Served Cold. And that's what I got.
Cool.
All right, everybody. Thanks for coming in, hanging out with us, and talking Dreadnought. We will be back next week with Angela.
The 310 to Yuma. Get ready to ride.
Peter. We'll do the whole train thing next week. We'll all get our chug-a-lugs on. It'll be great. Yeah, that's it for us. Thank you for joining us here at Crit Club. Write in. Tell us if you like stuff. Tell us if you hated stuff. We'll see you next week.
Yeah. Dreadnought. Thank you.
Dreadnought.
Bye.
Kia.
Yeah, do that.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.